Hey everyone, welcome to But Why the Podcast, the podcast where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, we wanted to make sure that you take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe us on iTunes or wherever you listen. It's the easiest way for people to find us and it helps us hear your feedback. Beyond that, come and join our conversation on Twitter at ButWhyThoughPC and on Facebook, facebook.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And if you like what you're doing and you want to support us a little more, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC. And if a monthly subscription is too much for you, make sure you check out our t-shirts. We have t-shirts open on TeePublic and available for purchase on our website through the merch tab, ButWhyThoughPodcast.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, and today we are talking about Jessica Jones in honor of Jessica Jones Season 2 coming out on Netflix this week. As always, I'm your host Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And just a quick thing, we're all recording in the same room today.
Hi.
Hello.
I is here.
I'm sure they can really tell the difference.
Well, I would hope, because it probably sounds a little bit better because they're all one level.
Yeah.
Because sometimes Adrian's up here, and then we're really down here.
Yeah. So do we get to blame you for that?
No,
blame
you whisper.
My amazing microphone.
Yes.
With multiple settings that I have no idea how to use.
Don't worry, we have multiple settings too, but we have no idea what we're doing.
So, yeah, we are talking about Jessica Jones, who is a fairly young superhero, like, years-wise, so far as how long she's been in comics and stuff. So it's just a really simple question, because she's pretty much an unknown. So did you guys know anything about her?
From when?
From, I guess, like, do you know her story? And when did you find it out, if you do know?
I mean, are we talking including the Netflix show or not?
Yeah, because the Netflix show is kind of what set her character off. And, like, kind of let everybody know her. Like most Marvel things.
I had no idea about Jessica Jones before I watched the Netflix series. I didn't even watch the Netflix series until, like, right before Daredevil came out. Because I was like, oh, you gotta catch up on... I hear this Netflix Marvel stuff is pretty good. So I watched it. And, yeah, I think your character's dope. And then I started, you know, listening to Kate talk about her other backstory stuff, so... I really know nothing outside of season one and then Defenders, so.
I knew she existed, and she was in some of the Marvel video games. Or at least she wasn't really a playable character, but she, like, there was mentioned, she was one of those people that sit in, like, the main headquarters,
huh,
and you could talk to sometimes, or she was in the computer.
I didn't know that.
But that's about it.
Was she drunk?
No.
Unplayable.
Junk bar fright is a necessity.
That's about all I knew that she existed.
So for me, I read all of Alias, kind of, sort of. I mean, I read it in parts when Jessica Jones was coming out on Netflix. Then I watched the Netflix show. But I really didn't know too much about her outside of that. I just knew that this was a hero that Marvel decided to say, hey, nobody knows you. We're going to take a, I want to say take a chance on the show, but it kind of knocked it out of the park. Which we do have a Marvel Netflix show, which you can go back and listen to after this one. Because primarily in this episode, I'm going to focus on her comic arc and how that plays into everything and how she's been situated within the comics. Because a lot of her But Why Those are there. So yeah, Jessica Campbell Jones Cage is a fictional superhero, as are most of the people we cover, who is in... her own comic books published by Marvel, and she is a character who was created by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gatos. And this is, Bendis has like kind of a hit or miss like standing when it comes to comic book creations, and Jessica Jones is kind of one of those characters that people are extremely thankful that Bendis created. She is a former superhero who becomes the owner and sole employee of Alias Private Investigations, and throughout her superhero career, she has gone by Jewel, Nitrous, and Power Woman.
Those are some pretty bad names.
They're really bad names.
Nitrous ain't that bad.
I just think of Fast and the Furious.
Oh, now I'm thinking of Fast and the Furious. What makes me like it even more?
She gotta go fast.
I think of a knight of a suit of armor. Like, she's running around looking like a medieval knight. That is all I think of.
Yeah, so, like, Nitrous was her darker timeline.
I mean, better than Power Woman. Power Woman sounds lame.
Well, I mean, I wasn't saying it was the worst.
Well, I'm saying Nitrous is the best. That's my favorite one of the three
mentioned. I mean, she had pink hair and a white spandex suit when she was Jewel.
Yeah, see, I don't like that. Give me Nitrous. Nitrous. Now I'm thinking of like her.
NO2?
Now that I wish like Michelle Rodriguez would have played her, and like, that would have just been her name, Nitrous. It would have worked out really well.
And so for those listening at home, to try and distinguish Nitrous from Nitrous, it's spelled Knightres.
Nitrous oxide.
Nitrous. Put some respect on her name.
Nitrous. But to give a little bit of character backstory, like we always do, Bendis actually originally envisioned her being a series based on Jessica Drew. Do y'all know who Jessica Drew is?
Sounds familiar.
No.
Spider-Woman.
Oh.
So Matt probably hates her.
Accurate.
She...
Get him, Twitter.
So she is one of the Spideys, and initially he had wanted her to be in this story, but then Marvel actually had her lined up to be the Queen of the Skrull in Secret Invasion, so she cannot be put into any other stories. So she was actually created in 2001, so she's only been around for 17 years, compared to every other comic book character that we've covered on this show, which span 50 to 60 plus. So she is by far the newest.
Except the Punisher, which is only about 30 plus.
Oh, yeah, the Punisher. Yeah. But still younger than him.
Not by much, though. Wait, yes.
Never yeah.
Mind. Never mind. I'm thinking, I saw something else. Never mind.
He's been around double the time she has. As we kind of go through this stuff, there was a little bit of hesitation initially, kind of thinking that Jessica Drew was going to inform a lot of what he was doing, but Bendis was ultimately able to give Jones this distinguished voice outside of anything revolving around Spider-Woman. And on a Marvel Comics podcast, Bendis actually expressed his desire to incorporate Jones into the parallel universe of the Ultimate Marvel imprint. Specifically in Ultimate Spider-Man number 106, where she appears at Peter Parker's school. And a lot of her background inside the Marvel Universe itself, she is actually friends with Peter Parker. She did end up having a crush on Peter Parker, and they went to the same high school. She faced a lot of the bullying and stuff from Flash Thompson like he did, and she was ostracized. And when her parent died, he kind of took to her like, "We're both orphans," essentially. But I'm really happy that the stuff I know is not from the Ultimate imprint, and it is actually from the Max imprint, because I don't like Ultimates. Jones has starred in 3 ongoing series for herself, so where she's the focus. Alias, The Pulse, and Jessica Jones.
So, what question to you? Does Alias have anything to do or anywhere close to the actual show Alias?
With Elektra? Jennifer Garner? No.
No idea who plays it, but...
No, it has nothing to do with Alias. And that's actually why they ended up not making a show for her called Alias. Because they initially, a while ago, around the same time that Alias was on TV, they wanted to run her by...
Well, that's why I was like, I thought that was the same time frame.
Yeah, it was the exact same time frame, and they realized that was not a good idea. And that's why when they were naming this show, they went through what we can call it Alias. Well, that doesn't really work. And then they wanted to do AKA Jessica Jones as like a nod to Alias, you know, also known as Alias. But they opted just for going with her name as the title. And then all of the episodes, fun fact, all of the episodes start with AKA as a nod. And then, of course, as Adrian mentioned earlier, it's the name of her investigation company. In the show.
Yeah. I'm learning. We're all learning together, folks. Just put two and two together.
So, like I said, you have Alias, The Pulse, and Jessica Jones, which are her solo series. Alias and Jessica Jones, the latter being the one that's running currently, are both more adult in nature, while The Pulse is something that is more readable by a wider range of audiences, which means a lot of her experiences are toned down, and a lot of her, at least from what I've seen, a lot of the way her background is touched on isn't as intricate as it is in other offshoots, just because they don't have the availability to do that. So Alias itself started in November 2001 and it ended in 2004 and it ran for a total of 28 issues. So it's actually a pretty easy read if you want to get into it. And I would recommend reading the Alias series if you are new to Jessica Jones, you want to watch season two, and you don't have time to binge season one. Alias gives you a lot of the background that you do need to know going in, her trauma, her experiences with the Purple Man, and a little bit of like extra flair with Luke Cage because more happens in Alias than the actual show. So it's an easy place to start, and Marvel Unlimited is like $9.99 a month and you get a whole bunch of comics, so I would recommend that. After that, she is in The Pulse, where Bendis pulled a lot of the characters from Alias down into this series, and it ran for 14 issues from April of 2004 to May of 2006. And then Jessica Jones, her solo title, which is ending in 2 issues, I believe, as of right now, debuted in October 2016. She's also a member of the New Avengers alongside Luke Cage. Her husband, and...
I actually did know that.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. We're on the same page. And this is actually called Marvel's Heroic Age, which is 2010, and she lasted the entire series from 2010 to 2013, but for a lot of the stuff, she's, like, kind of an Avenger in every team that she's associated with, whether it's New Avengers or Mighty Avengers. And I'll explain a little bit why she's kind of and not fully dedicated like everybody else. She has reasons. So, how did she get her powers? What exactly are her powers? Now I'm going to tell you. So, on the way home from Disneyland, her parents, and her brother, I believe, they're not named in the comics.
So, one question, though.
Yeah.
This background for where she gets her powers, what year is this from?
This is from Alias.
It's meta as shit, right? Disneyland.
It is from before.
They should have, like, they need to...
Yeah, fuck, I didn't realize that.
You need to canonize Disneyland in our MCU, for one, and put that in season two. That's what I hope happens in season two of Jessica Jones. I hope they put this car crash and... She's in there with, like, little Mickey Mouse ears. Yeah.
Well, they already put it in season one.
Oh.
But it's not Disneyland. Sadly.
That sucks.
New memory. Add Disneyland in the background.
Add Disneyland. just in the background.
Give the same scene in a flashback.
Yeah.
But with Mickey Mouse ears.
But with Mickey Mouse ears, yeah.
They can CGI mustache. They can CGI Disneyland.
Yeah, they can do it.
Fuck, I didn't notice that when I was writing these notes.
I've been waiting for you to get to that part.
I was like, come on.
Come on, let's get there so we can talk about how meta this is.
So, yeah, she's in a car with her parents on vacation. They're driving back from Disneyland. Tony Stark actually gave them the tickets. And it's her parents, her little brother in the car, and the car collides with a military convoy, which is carrying radioactive chemicals. Her entire family is killed, and she spends several months in a coma. Also, poor Jessica Jones is in a coma a lot. Like, a lot, a lot.
So why did Tony Stark give them tickets?
The parents' company. Like, they worked there.
Is that the show? I haven't watched Jessica Jones.
That's not in the show. So
yeah, I haven't watched Jessica Jones, like, since, like, the first... Daredevil season came out, so I don't...
Yeah, so in the show, it's just her family getting ready to go on a vacation. They go on a vacation, and they crash. She's in a coma, she comes out, and she has powers. And she knows that it happens from the crash.
Put in there, too, like... Tony giving the
You know
ticket.
What's also yeah. funny
it
about
it? Just bring it in so well. Then it needs to happen.
You know what? For a D-lister, he sure does seem to be related to every single person we talk about.
If you would like to know more about Matt's passion about Iron Man, you can check out our Patreon review of the first Iron Man movie for $3.
Yeah,
he went
D-lister
off.
D-lister giving
tickets. Yeah, D-lister wouldn't be the reason Jessica Jones gets her powers.
So anyway, as we move through this, what was I say? Yeah, so she's in a coma a whole bunch. This is one of the first of many, mainly because although this radioactive chemicals give her super strength, they only give her slight invulnerability. So she can still be wounded, she can still be shot, she's still going to get hurt. It just takes a little bit more effort. So whereas her parallel and paramour, Luke Cage, has unbreakable skin and is super strong, she's just super strong, so she can't be as... you know, willy-milly with through stuff.
So based on that, is Luke Cage really her parallel? Or would it be like Captain America more of a parallel?
Captain America would probably be more of a parallel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just meant because, like, they're a couple and they're both super, super strong.
Okay.
Which is another great point of the first season because they make them fight and it's a really great thing to see.
She just wants to talk about them banging.
Yeah, I know. That's where she was going to go with this.
There's baby making later on in this episode. I digress. She discovers that this radiation, like I said, gives her super strength, limited invulnerability, but she also has flight, which she doesn't have in the show, and she does make a reference to it saying that it's not necessarily flying so much as it is jumping really, really high. So think original Superman who jumps. She can do that. But in the comics, while she is an active superhero, she has pretty good use of her flight. But as she stops being a superhero and leaves that life around, that's one of the things that just completely leaves her. Which, when she becomes active with the Avengers again, she gets akin to flying again. But it's kind of one of those, like, use it or lose it type things.
Yeah, I'm cool with her not flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too.
I think it'd make her character, like, out of, like, the Defenders, like... level, yeah. Like, B-list plane.
Yeah, because she is a street hero, and she's defined as a street hero in all of these things, even when she is flying, and there is, I don't know too much about it, but there, like, the reason she's called Jewel is because she is able to shoot, kind of like Jubilee, you know, Jubilee shoots out those little sparks, she can shoot out light.
Yeah, I like that
idea. But it doesn't really get used.
Can we get past this one? No, I can't.
Flying and be able to shoot stuff with your hands automatically makes you, like, above everybody in Defenders.
Exactly. But the thing is, this isn't how anybody knows her characters. And when her character is in fights, like, Jessica Jones, as we know her, after she's left the persona of Jewel, she doesn't do any of this. She is just raw emotion and brute strength. So after she leaves that mantle behind, she ends up losing all of that. And a lot of it just has to do with a lot of the psychological effects that she has from her time being a superhero and what led to her leaving. So as we move out of her little origin story, I want to talk a lot about Alias as the comic, because this is kind of quintessential Jessica Jones, and this is what people read. This is what people identify with when they say they identify with Jessica Jones. And in this, she comes off being known as Jewel. And the thing is, as Jewel, Jones is really uneventful as a superhero. She doesn't really do anything. She's just kind of there, couple wins, you know, just nothing big, you know, she's not big time. And then she walks into a disturbance in a restaurant, and she witnesses his name Zebediah in the comics. Zebediah Kilgrave, also known as the Purple Man, tell everybody inside the restaurant to stop breathing. And that's kind of where it first hits her, the power that he has. And then Bendis hits you with the power, manipulation, and, like, the trauma that she's about to face. Because when she first comes up against Purple Man, he does tell her to strip. And he tells her that a lot. There is obviously a lot of psychological abuse and stuff like this that comes from her, but the main thing that he ends up using her for, other than pretty much just torching her, he ends up using her as his own, like, personal wrecking ball and his own personal criminal aid. Like, she is his muscle. He doesn't get his hands dirty, she does. And the weird thing is, like, he has control over her for about 8 months. And in this 8 months, he actually makes her think that she's living in a comic. And that she is doing stuff so that her readers will be happy. And a lot of that is focused around him.
Yeah, the guy's kind of a dick. But he's so compelling. In the
show. Not in the comic. But he's a dick. Yeah, so the difference between, like, and we'll talk about this at the end when we talk about Kilgrave as a villain. But, like, the difference between what they did with him in the show is they did make him compelling. In the comic, he is just straight bad. Like, there is nothing compelling about him.
Oh, yeah, that would have hated him.
But... yeah. Like, everything about him is about the torture that Jessica receives. So, essentially, one of the things that she does attest to in Alias is, like, kind of like this gray area of whether or not he raped her. But the main thing that does happen is he makes her watch as he does that to other women. So, like, she goes through a lot of shit. So as she ends up kind of trying to fly away from him, so the way Kilgrave works is because he was exposed to a neurotoxin, and so it has to do with radius. And the longer you're with him, the farther away you have to run to get out of his pool and out of his control. And so as she's flying away, and is about to leave, she ends up attacking Scarlet Witch, who in, like, the sun kind of looks like Daredevil, who Purple Man has told her to kill. And she ends up attacking her, and then the Vision knocks the crap out of her, puts her in a coma, and Carol Danvers ends up saving her. Because in this series, Carol Danvers and her are really close friends, because as Jones is going through a lot of the rebuilding from the trauma of Kilgrave, she depends on alcohol. She depends on self-medicating and distancing herself off. And actually, Carol Danvers herself is a recovered alcoholic. And so she's able to have this friendship. And in this show, actually, Trish Walker's character takes on a lot of the characteristics that Carol Danvers has in her comic. So that might be a good touchstone for you, Adrian, to kind of think about how her dynamic works with a friend. Like, she has one friend, and that's about
it. I'm just thinking, like we're at a point, like, if they wanted to do that storyline, they could have done that. Like, they can, we're there. You could put Scarlet Witch and all these people in one thing. You could put, it's a good time.
No, when I was writing this, I'm like, all of these people are in the universe right now.
I know, they could have done this.
She also sleeps around a lot, and a lot of people have used this to kind of, like, show that it like, this detachment was formed because of a lot of the sexual trauma she had from Kilgrave. But she does try to form some meaningful relationships as well, and Carol Danvers actually sets her up with Scott Lang, who is also in the universe.
Yeah, they could do all of this. Make it happen.
And so as she's going through the recovery process, she actually sits down with Jean Grey, one of the most famous X-Men, who ends up placing kind of these walls in her head. So if you think back to the X-Men 90s cartoon, when she's doing a lot of the work with Rogue, partitioning off Carol Danvers, that's a lot of what she does here. She kind of puts, like, this nice barrier around Jessica's mind. The only thing is Jessica has to activate it herself. So it's there, but it only comes into play when she realizes it. And so Kilgrave ends up coming back into her life in the last four issues, and she realizes that this has happened. But before that, she's pretty much the most demoralized and depressed superhero, and this is why she stops considering herself a superhero, opens up a private eye business, and what happens is that nobody really knew she was gone. And he made her believe that nobody cared that she was gone either. Now, it's not necessarily true, but she's existing in this complete bubble of isolation that happens a lot when you're coming out of an abusive relationship or in an abusive relationship. So she has a big rebuilding process. And when she kind of decides to get back in the streets and fighting again, she becomes Nitrous.
Yo, the Nitrous name is so much better now. Now we have the history behind Nitrous Matt. Admit that it's awesome. What does she look like when she's Nitrous?
I don't know, actually.
A knight in shiny armor. That's gold with pink highlights.
She does have pink hair as a jewel.
Yeah, that's pretty dope. I'm down with that.
She kind of looks like Daredevil.
Yeah, like that. Kind of looks pretty bad.
But her and Daredevil do have the same stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So why wouldn't she look like that?
So here is also where you get this,
she's
like, lasting... this is where you get, like, this lasting relationship with Luke Cage as well. And Luke Cage is actually a dick to her a lot of the time until she realizes that Kilgrave has come back. And she actually realizes he's come back because a woman comes up to her and says, hey, I need you to take my case. And she's like, why am I going to take your case? She's like, just try it. She goes back to the woman's apartment. There are 30 different, mostly different people, but mostly women in that room saying, we want to take down Kilgrave. And it turns out that they had been going to the Avengers with this, and they kept getting turned away. So, like, Jessica Jones is, like, the last hope. And so she decides to do that. And so the night before her big standoff, she ends up getting really, really freaking drunk, running over to Luke Cage, and pretty much just yelling that he's never going to be as good as Daredevil. I don't know. It's really weird. And he just, like... He kind of breaks down. He doesn't break down, but, like, he breaks down that wall between him and her and stops being such a dick. And so he just puts her to sleep. And when she wakes up and they talk in the morning, she breaks down to him. And for the first time, there is a character in this universe that exists knowing all of her trauma, because she tells him. And from that point on, they have a super long friendship. And then eventually this leads to them, you know, getting it on.
Banging.
And making a baby. because they admit their feelings to each other. And she ends the comic being pregnant. And that's how it ends. And so essentially it goes into her making a normal life after this point. There's a lot more to it, so I probably missed a lot. Don't at me. It's a great comic, and I want to talk about a lot of it. Side note and fun fact, she's really good friends and does a lot of work with Ben Ulrich.
Not in the...
Exactly.
Not in the Netflix show. Because you did.
So, the first but why they want to bring in is the idea of family. Because when it comes to families and, like, marriages in the MCU, there kind of aren't a lot that last. And it's kind of really sad. But that's not Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. Jessica Jones and Luke Cage do last. They have their stumbles, but they last. And so in The Pulse, it's kind of centered around her coming back to this normal life. And you see a lot of her life through Luke's eyes. And then you also see her through her pregnancy. And a lot of it is focusing on protecting their new daughter, Danielle, who is named after Danny Rand, Luke's best friend.
Now you lost me.
Yep.
Oh, no. I kind of knew. So I did know they were married, which also kind of was weird when they portrayed it in the show of, like, how they're doing with Luke Cage, which was kind of,
yeah.
I didn't understand.
So, like, going back and rewatching the Jessica Jones show, their dynamic together is so freaking good. And I totally see it as Endgame because it progresses really well.
Yeah, right? Like, when he comes back, they kind of have, like, some moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, was it
in Defenders?
Defenders?
Yeah.
I'm trying to, like, remember watching Defenders. But, like, yeah, they set it up. And Misty...
At the end, they set it up. And Misty actually hates her.
Yeah, she's not ending it with Misty Knight. No way.
Yeah.
If they do, it's a damn shame.
They already got together, and Misty was like, nah, I'm done.
Yeah.
But yeah, So
why are we talking about Misty again?
Huh? Because like the show sets up like Luke Cage just like him and Misty.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. The end is him and Rosario. The beginning is him and Misty, and then the end is him.
Well, Luke Cage is banging a bunch of people. Well, when okay.
Defenders, literally, he's with Claire.
Oh yeah, Claire. Yeah. yeah.
But then it yeah. like the
he
last...
bangs a bunch of people.
But the
it's not my fault. I can't keep all of straight.
But the last episode of Defenders, to your point, Adrian, does end with him at the diner talking about the incident. Because essentially what happens is Kilgrave convinces Luke to fight her, and then he ends up shooting himself in the head with a shotgun. Which causes a concussion, which causes swelling in the brain, and Claire, of course, gets brought in to save him. And then from that point, they don't see each other.
She'll do more eventually, hopefully.
So as we move through it, Civil War, she is a participant. Luke is the main one because he actually takes up for the anti-registration side with Cap. But her, what she does is she actually ends up fleeing to Canada once she realizes that it's not safe enough for her baby Danny. And then in Secret Invasion, you also have a lot to that same points where Jessica, there's a lot of Jessica taking the baby away from this, but also not informing Luke. And in Secret Invasion, which if you don't know what Secret Invasion is, there's been a whole bunch of body doubled Skrulls who are not the real people, and they fight about it.
This one's freaky.
Really freaky because it's body snatchers. But the thing is here, and I really want to make it clear, is not only family important to Jessica's arc in these storylines by her protecting her daughter, you also need to understand that Luke is an amazing father. Like, this is a loving family unit in a way that we really don't see a whole bunch in the MCU. And what happens in Secret Invasion is that they actually go through a separation because Luke is pissed that she took his daughter and did not tell him where they were going. The baby ends up getting taken away and stolen, and then Jessica ends up fighting the Skrull to bring her baby back with the help of Iron Fist, Fantastic Four, Bucky, and the New Avengers, and Luke eventually gets the baby from Harry Osborn, and yeah.
There's all a lot this of can stuff. Happen. They could literally do Secret Invasion. They could literally
there are
do
plans
it.
For Secret Invasion.
Just without Fantastic Four, because reasons. Just reboot it. In the thing. Don't do it in a whole other movie. But you could definitely do Secret Invasion. We just have to get past getting bitch slapped by Thanos first.
But essentially what this leads to happen is once Luke saves the baby, he realizes that this isn't a place for a child. And they reconcile and gives the baby back to Jessica to take. So essentially what happens in the heroic age is that they realize they need a superpowered nanny to watch over the baby. And Skrull Girl takes care of her. That's the nanny. And then she resumes being Jewel for the New Avengers and keeping, you know, that on the side. And this is where I said she's an auxiliary member and not a real member, because a lot of her stuff has to do with being a mother to Danny as well. So she has this progression from this really flawed character and damaged character who doesn't believe that she can love or is deserving of it into a character who has a very loving life and provides love for her daughter. Which is a really great arc to see. And you see her having that, you know, she can't, like, her trauma doesn't make her not normal once she fights through it, which is really great to see an arc, which is why I brought this up as a but why, though. So I wanted to bring this up. She takes up the name Power Woman to honor Luke, who is Power Man, and also because she wants to set a role model for her daughter. And Power Woman kind of sounds a little bit better than Jewel. Not by much. Yeah, but
I mean, it sounds just as bad as Power Man. Like, they're both.
This is true.
They're both pretty nuts.
This is very true.
What would Luke Cage's be? What's his equivalent to Jewel?
I have no idea.
Diamond.
I can't think of, like, a manly sounding gem.
I can't either. So in the New Avengers arc and this area, Luke Cage makes the Mighty Avengers, and she doesn't like this, because obviously, why the hell are you making an Avengers team, Luke, when you have a baby daughter that you got to take care of? Don't be bringing hell down on you. I mean, there's a whole bunch here. I can go into the Superior Spider-Man stuff, but I mean, it's not really necessary. I think you listening at home and you guys here at the table can get, like, family and motherhood is something that's actually really important to Jessica's character and something that you wouldn't get out of just watching the TV show. But it just shows that it shows her in recovery, because a lot of talk around Jessica Jones, and rightfully so, is on the impact she has for going through her trauma. But there is light after that trauma, and I think that sends a really important message for people who have been on that end. That there is a brighter day at the end. I'm sending. So we've talked about the show on our Defenders episode, we've talked about the show on our Marvel Netflix episode, and we've kind of talked about the show throughout here, so I don't know how much time to spend. But really what I want to touch on is the show as being a but why, though, is the show is held as probably one of the best stories in the Marvel Netflix universe when it's voted upon.
Like Arrow season 4?
Oh, God. I hate that podcast. I hate that podcast, and I'm probably going to leave that in because they suck. But it is heralded as one of the best shows on Netflix for the Marvel Universe, and a lot of it has to do with the writing, and a lot of it has to do with the writing of trauma, PTSD, abuse, and seeing yourself through it. And that is done largely because this show was created by a woman, Melissa Rosenberg, and it's written by women. And the producers, 7 out of 13 of them are women. And the only men that are on there are people like Stan Lee and Joe Quesada, who are literally just like character consultants because they wrote the comics.
So if 7 out of 13 are women and there's only 2 men, that only equals 9 people.
No, I said like Stan Lee and Joe Quesada, because those are 2 people on the producer's end. The other ones are people who have worked in the comics and work as consultants on the character. Okay. Which I said, but you didn't pay attention to.
He just saw math, and he was like, that doesn't make no sense. I need my math to make sense.
Exactly. No, I just put those 2 names because those are 2 really big powerhouses that work on producing and consulting the majority of TV shows and television shows. Because obviously, Stan Lee has had to cancel multiple appearances and doesn't have time to actually oversee a production project like this, but he does get producing credits. But when it comes to the actual story, research, and stuff like that, and portraying this stuff, it is, by and large, in the hands of women that are doing it. The other people are mainly character consultants. So in the show, I do want to bring up 2 characters outside of Jessica, because we get the introduction to Luke Cage. I actually think that this is my favorite characterization of Luke Cage, because you get angry Luke Cage. Like, you get pure angry Luke Cage avenging the death of his wife. And trying to. And that's a side that we don't see in any other Luke Cage version. And it's not a diss on the character, but it's a very different characterization from Jessica Jones to Luke Cage's his solo series. But that does have to come into play with what he learns and what he experiences going through Kilgrave, because Luke Cage doesn't leave Kilgrave unscathed. Because essentially Kilgrave says, oh, you had sex with Jessica. I love Jessica. Now I'm going to brainwash you into ruining her life. And he has to do that, and he has no option not to. And then you have Trish Walker, who I mentioned briefly. She is a reference to the character of Hellcat. And Trish Walker takes the place of Carol Danvers, like I said earlier. And she's really freaking dynamic. And there's a season where she actually risks her life to save Jessica from Nuke, who is another character in there, by taking kind of like it's like a super soldier pill. It like heightens everything, but you need to have a downer in order to take it without getting hurt. And so what she does is she takes the upper, fights, because she's been training herself, because she's paranoid as all hell. Like, she has a panic room and shit. But she didn't have the strength to take a mom. Takes the pill, fights him, and then immediately drops into, like, oh my god, I'm having a heart attack. But she's a really good character, like, all around, and she does get to shine in different aspects, but she's kind of like Jessica's grounding force to not really losing a hold on things. Especially when it's really easy. And she's one of the first people to actually believe that Kilgrave is there and is real, because Trish actually calls him out on the radio. Kilgrave ends up scaring Trish extremely bad just because he didn't like what she said, and he ends up sending police over to kill her because he's brainwashed them. So there's a lot going on. There are a lot of really great characters in the show, but I wanted to highlight those two just because Jessica Jones, like the majority of the Netflix shows, do have great side characters with some really great stories, and I think it actually lands stronger than some of the other shows. It also only has one villain. It's the only Marvel Netflix show that has one villain.
This is also true.
But I kind of want to make a counter-argument that it has two villains, and one of them is actually Jessica herself.
Ooh.
I can't argue Ooh. Against that, because there's an episode in the middle where she has a realization that she isn't actually able to be controlled by Kilgrave, and then her entire dynamic changes, and then it changes even more when the woman she's trying to protect sees, like, so essentially Jessica's Jones, her switch gets flipped into action because she comes face to face with a woman who went through the same thing that she did. Up until that point, Jessica just pretended like it didn't happen. She drank, she pushed it away, she didn't process it, and until she saw, like, pretty much, like, she bore that guilt. And so that girl that she's been trying to protect saw this and just, like, killed herself and said, "Now you can kill him. I'm out of the way. I don't need his confession." And then that's when Jessica's like, "Well, okay, guess you're going to kill Kilgrave." So that's kind of a valid argument, I would say.
But definitely doesn't have the whole two different people. Well,
yeah.
But wait, there's more. Here's the twist. I like Trish. I like Luke Cage.
Trinity? Yes.
Trinity also does make her first appearance here. That's the lawyer that she works with. Who, I don't know the actress's real name, but she was Trinity in the Matrix.
That is her name.
Yeah. I will say this.
I freaked out when I saw it. I was like, babe, look away. I haven't seen her in anything in years, but here she is.
And I do want to say, too, I know, Adrian, you binge-watched it, but I binge-watched it for the first time this week in preparation for this episode, and it is really hard to get through. Like, it's pretty heavy, like, from episode one all the way out. There's a lot of really deep emotional stuff going on, and there's a lot of, like...
Sometimes you gotta run before you can walk.
Thank you, Tony! Anyway, like I was saying, if you're new to the show and you want to watch the first season, I would advise watching it over, like, the course of a few days. Give yourself some time to kind of, like, decompress. But from Adrian's perspective...
I just binged it. I think that just comes from just different experiences. Like, I'm just a heterosexual male who just wants to see stuff happen. I binged it, but I kind of... my wife and I binged it just because we couldn't... Like, we just had to know what happened next.
Yeah.
Like, Kilgrave was just so compelling as a not very nice person. And the Luke Cage stuff was awesome. I liked Trish, like, learning how to fight and stuff. And I was like, oh. And I started, like, looking stuff up, like, on the background of the character. I was like, oh, my God, she might be Hellcat Liv. Like, she might actually be fighting stuff. Like, and I was just totally compelled and, like, enthralled in the show. And we just had to finish it. But I can understand from Mike Kate's perspective, for sure. Like, if you think that you might have trouble, like, watching stuff that we just talked about in one sitting, probably not.
Yeah. Probably do three episodes at a time.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. She throws a lot of people through walls.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically kind of all she does. Like, I like Jessica Jones, but she is not a good fighter.
No!
Like, if someone just teaches her how to fight, unstoppable. Easily the best defender. Like, if she just learns...
She's also drunk for 90% of all her encounters.
There's Drunken Fist. She can learn Drunken Fist from somebody. I'm sure...
Not Danny Rand.
I'm sure Danny Rand knows some Drunken Fist masters out there somewhere with all of his brooding. And it also, like, makes, like... this is slightly off topic, but, like, it also makes, like, Iron Fist brooding just so much, like, unnecessary garbage. Like, stop brooding, dude. Like, Jessica Jones need to tell you what she's been through over the course of a season.
Yeah.
So you can stop brooding and acting like the world hates you, you rich boy. Ugh. Hey, Iron Fist.
And then Luke Cage was an experiment. Matt Murdock's dad was a gambler.
Yeah.
He lost his sight.
Yeah.
And Iron Fist ended up in a place that he ended up being the best person at.
Yeah.
And basically. Then he came back to a whole bunch of money.
And he still brooded all through Defenders.
But he's the immortal Iron Fist.
Oh, is that who he is? I didn't know. I didn't know. You only had to say it 6 times an episode.
I still liked him more than I did Luke Cage in the Defenders.
That's a different argument for a different
time.
Yeah.
But
you can go check out our Defenders review where we talk about all these things and the characters.
Yeah, but I think Kate's point on like Luke Cage being different, it kind of reminds me of like how I like T'Challa better in Civil War than I do in the new Black Panther movie. But I think it's only because like he's like more like visceral and like wants to get revenge. I don't know why that's so compelling to me see people want to like get their.
Because they throw care to the wind. They're not thinking about consequences, and they're not thinking about anything. They just want to settle that vendetta.
So the only things I have seen of the show is basically the episodes with Luke Cage in the hospital getting shot and a whole thing, in a series of that.
Yeah.
And just from that, it does seem more intriguing compared to... His show wasn't bad, but the Defenders...
He is a badass. That's another reason why I was like, oh, I hope they get together. Yeah. Because they're doing it and they're throwing each other around. This is crazy.
And they're breaking beds.
Yeah, this is nuts.
Their fight scene is actually really good. Like, they throw each other through numerous walls. Like, it's really good.
He's just a guy just trying to live his life, man. In the little bar thing.
And the way it's written, too. Like, you know that Kilgrave is making him do this. But the entire time they're fighting, Kilgrave's talking through a microphone. And he's reminding Jessica that she killed his wife. And this is probably coming from a real place. So he does nothing but make her feel like shit.
Yeah.
Which is a regular tactic.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Tactic. Pretty good.
Yeah, you should at least watch, like, the Luke Cage arc. Like, towards the end, like, when you see, like, the story start tying in, because it then ties into, like, the Luke Cage thing. So basically, Marvel knew what they were doing when they made Jessica Jones. They had plans.
Yeah. It ties in really well to his show, because you understand why he doesn't want to do anything. Because his strength literally got used to destroy a whole bunch of shit. So, I want to work in fan, but why are those here? For the show, and I do want to send a giant thank you to the Dueven Comic Book family. As always, search that hashtag, go to the website, DuevenComicBook.com. They came out for, I think, the most fan, but why are those we've ever gotten for an episode. We got for this one. So, from @TaskVersusTheWorld... he says, the Netflix MCU deals with social issues. Superheroes can not only show us cool scenes, but teach us about ourselves in a way that no other media can. To me, Jessica Jones is about surviving abuse and about the nature of abuse itself, including how people become abusers, which is a nice call out to the compellingness that you noted for Kilgrave in the show. Next, from @JD Scrogan. I apologize. Scrogan?
Scrogan?
J.D. Scroggin?
J.D. Scroggin. That sounds like a superhero.
That does sound like a superhero. So, @JD Scroggin. I read the first volume of Alias for the first time this past weekend, and it gave me even a greater appreciation for the show, which nails the tone and characterization of Jessica perfectly. Not if you listen to Geek History Lesson. @CatLovesFilm says, I haven't been able to get that season one scene where she can no longer be controlled by Kilgrave out of my mind since I saw it. It was so powerful, and I think of it each time my own PTSD flares up again. From @BabyGrotesque, watching Jessica Jones literally changed my life because for the first time I got to see a real version of myself on TV. Not a princess, not a hero, real and fucking hurting. Representation matters, but unfortunately, sometimes it comes in the form of auditory hallucinations. And that is a callback to a lot of Jessica's PTSD, which involves getting put right back into the situation where she was last with Kilgrave. So as we move through, and I talked a lot about this on our Marvel Netflix episode, so just to kind of expand... One of the largest reasons that Jessica Jones resonates with a lot of people, and particularly women, talking about her abuse, her survival, her trauma, and really how the show showcases PTSD. We also talked about how it happens in, like, a specifically, like, male and military context with the Punisher when we did his review show, as well as his character episode from the comics. And for her, this really defines her as a character. She has what the show does really well with her dynamic. I don't want to call it a relationship, but her dynamic with Kilgrave is that you see him exhibiting all of what happens when you're in an abusive relationship. He isolates her from everybody around her. He literally kills everybody around her and makes it believe that it's her fault. He contains her to where she really can't move without him knowing. He threatens her. He uses language of love. You know, Kilgrave ultimately always says that he loves Jessica, and that's why he's doing this, which the comics also reinforce. And then gaslighting, which is a word that gets thrown around a lot, but I don't know if people necessarily know what that means. Gaslighting is literally, in Jessica's case, where she says, "You made me kill, you know, you made me kill Reva," which is Luke Cage's wife, and he says, "Oh, I didn't make you kill her. I told you to take care of her. You chose to kill her yourself." And it's a lot of every time Jessica is telling him what's happening, he's pushing back. And so when and there's another instance that kind of like hit me in the gut where he tells her, "I gave you everything." And she's like, "You gave me nothing but shame." And so like, there's a lot of this dynamic in her working through, and you get to see really, I mean, they are really hyperbolic in, you know, he convinces people to kill themselves to get a lot of this done. But the root of what he's doing is really what you can see in somebody who's going through this personally. And through his victims, you end up seeing really different ways that people deal with trauma. So everybody that Kilgrave ends up touching, the show ends up diving into how they deal with it. The antithesis, or like the other side of the coin to Jessica, is Nuke. He's supposed to be Nuke from the comics, but his name is Officer Simpson, who initially comes to kill Trish, and he thinks that he kills her, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And so he ends up showing back up, trying to break down the door and find the body. But when he's told that, oh, no, she's alive, he ends up getting into a relationship with her. And then he ultimately ends up on this giant quest to kill Kilgrave. But he ends up killing innocent people along the way. Just brute force. Nothing else matters but killing him. And that's how he processes it. Whereas for her, she feels it because she is trained to protect everybody around her. So as a sexual assault survivor, and if you want to hear more about this, I do talk about it in our Marvel Netflix episode. Like I said, she deals with a lot of PTSD episodes. And when this happens, they show her using not medicine, because she medicates herself with alcohol, but they actually researched ways, and it's called grounding. And grounding is what happens when you have an anxiety attack, a panic attack, or an episode of PTSD, you know, flaring up, where you ground yourself to your situation. And so she, you know, she mocks it and says, "All that therapist gave me was my childhood street names." But every time she's having a flashback, she automatically starts repeating her street names. Says one, then goes out of street until she's taken out of it and put back into the world. And you end up seeing this really great scene where she's talking with Hope, who's the woman who called this to her attention, who is also in her same position, where Hope is freaking out, and Hope just doesn't know what to do. And it's right after she's told Trish, "This doesn't work. Why, you know, it's just a street name." And she ends up saying, "Hey, no, where did you grow up? Now go out of street." And she ends up walking her through that. And that was something that the showrunners looked into to make sure that they were representing the treatment and the self-treatment and grounding methods that are used in it. So I thought that was something like really important to highlight, because a lot of thought went into how do we talk about this and how do we showcase it in a way that isn't just somebody making something up off of broad stereotypes. So ultimately, you end up having her having this triumph over Kilgrave. She captures him and tortures him, and she ultimately kills him. And so she's able to face her abuser and take that step and make sure he can't hurt anybody else. And this is obviously not like an advocate. Like, it's a superhero show, so not everybody should go out and kill people. So she's able to have that triumph over her abuser, and it's her, and it's when she's presented, she's not presented as whole. Like, she doesn't kill Kilgrave and all of a sudden she's happy and the world's good again. She's still messed up and she still has to work through these problems but that was a step towards getting healthy and dealing with this. So this is one of the really like groundbreaking and unique things about the show. It's something that resonated with so many people, and it's something that is very reflective in the comics. And what differentiates a lot of the violence in Jessica Jones from any other Marvel Netflix series is that the violence she faces is very personal and it's intimate violence. It's not the Daredevil hallway scene. It's not Luke Cage. It's not Defenders. It's none of that. So there's a very personal level. So for the fan, but why those here?
Well, before we get into fan, but why those, this whole thing kind of like this whole show and shows all this drama and everything is kind of what makes me upset with Marvel, in which, not that Hold it on. Did, kind of makes me upset with Marvel and kind of more of them, like, why Disney and Marvel just skipped over Hank Pym.
Yes.
And they don't actually address any of the problems. I know we have the new movie coming out, and I know it's a little thing, but just the fact that they're willing to do this and show so much well, the fact that they do not go into all the problems, they literally skip all of Hank Pym and what he deals with the original Wasp.
Yeah.
And it kind of bugs me that they don't actually did anything with that.
Yeah. Because, like, to put some context to it, like, Hank Pym, the first Ant-Man and his wife, Janet Van Dyne, Hank Pym goes through a mental breakdown in which he hits Janet Van Dyne. And he abuses her, and that is a storyline that a lot of people like to forget. But I do agree. I think the way Jessica Jones handles it is something that can be used as a model to actually having that processed. We didn't get it,
obviously,
but we also don't know what we're gonna get, because Janet Van Dyne is gonna be in this next episode, so they may bring in that dynamic with them. We don't know, because we do know from the first Ant-Man that Hope does hate her father. We don't really know.
We don't get that because he didn't create Ultron, so it doesn't matter.
You know, it's also easier to do something like that over 13 episodes than it is.
Exactly.
I guess that's also true. But I guess the fact they've literally ignored that whole entire thing. Yeah.
And this is also like Marvel's, other than the Punisher, until the Punisher came, this is probably the most hard R ratings for a show that it has.
Yes.
Like, even over Daredevil, just because of what they show. So I don't actually. I think, if they had writers that cared, they can do an arc. They could have done an arc like that well with Hank. But I think Adrian is right to actually unpack Janet's side. To actually unpack Janet's side and what she's going through, you need more than a movie.
Yeah. Unless you're going to make like the movie about Hank Pym, which they didn't do. So that's probably like why.
But which bugs me why I won't watch that movie. I refuse to watch it.
But it's a fantastic movie!
It's good heist movie.
It's a good movie. It's one of my favorite solos.
I know it's not obviously Jessica Jones, but I know it's kind of the same trauma of him having this entire completely mental breakdown, and why we get this whole Jessica Jones arc and great stuff.
But they couldn't do it with Wasp.
They literally ignore and act like this part never existed.
Yeah.
Oh no, sorry.
And he's getting movies, and they completely act like.
But I also think the difference is, though, like, Jessica Jones's character is rooted in this,
right,
from all parts, whereas that's just a piece of Hank Pym's story.
Correct, but unfortunately, it's also what he's best known for at this point.
Yeah, which is why they went with Scott Lang.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, exactly the point.
Yeah, no, it is a big loop, but I don't know. I think the reason the Marvel Netflix universe and the MCU will never be together is because of the difference in tone from the two. Yeah. Like, the Marvel Netflix universe takes, like kind of like Task said in his fan, but why though, it takes these real social issues and unpacks them and showcases them. Which isn't, it's just not something you get in the MCU. Those are superhero movies, first and foremost. And then Civil War comes in and punches you in the heart.
Agreed.
But yes, now to the fan but why those.
Yeah, so for this, we have a whole bunch of fan but why those. I'll be putting them up on the website. So thank you for sharing your stories and contributing, because these are really deep. So from at Lizzie Lynn Garcia, Jessica Jones matters to me because she showed how women accurately deal with PTSD and sexual assault. Jessica Jones is not perfect. She's highly flawed, and she's dealing with her demons the best she can, and I love her for it. At Sekra underscore XP, as an abuse survivor with PTSD, I can relate to her struggles. I see myself being the reluctant hero that she is. I cope with anxiety every day. The show hit me really hard and was hard to watch, but it's my favorite. She makes me not feel so alone. At Ursat's Ash, one of our bloggers, for butwhythoughpodcast.com, make sure you check that out. She actually has an awesome article about her worries about Janet Van Dyne,
which is also being brought into the movie. Why I thought of this, because she really wanted this episode, and also she's a big fan of Janet.
Yeah, because Janet is Jessica in the way that she really overcomes everything.
Yes.
So, yeah. So she says, I read Alias when I was 14, and it was one of the things that taught me how to empathize with people who had experienced abuse and helped me cope with my own abuse. It's still my favorite comic to this day. She wasn't okay for most of the book, but in the end, she faces her abuser head on and makes a better life for herself and her family. I also want to say in the comic, and I don't know why I left this out, but she beats the crap out of Kilgrave and she kills him.
I think that was kind of assumed.
So, yeah. in the show, she snaps his neck after.
Yeah, you said he tortures her, or like, yeah, I think you mentioned it at some point.
So at CJ the Architect, Jess stands out to me because she is a good example of what PTSD and grief will do to a person. You can't snap your fingers and get over it. You have to learn to live with those scars. At Angel T 18, Jessica Jones has taught me that even as messed up as I am, that it's okay, that even if I'm damaged to hell and back from PTSD, that doesn't mean I'm broken so long as I get back up. From at Real Comics, everyone has spoken so well about the PTSD and being the survivor, so I'll hit on another angle. The comic was outstanding. First, those MAC watercolor covers set a mood. Then inside, some of the BMB, and he's referring to Bendis here, some of BMB's best writing. I consider it the gem of the Max imprint. The Purple Man was and is one of the most frightening villains I've ever encountered in a comic book. Jess is gritty, unapologetic, and tough as nails. It's also the start of her and Luke, one of the most realistic relationships in comics. Then came the show, and I rarely say this, but it was even better. The way they represented her struggles was raw and at times unwatchable because it was so real. If you can't guess, I consider it one of the best live-action things Marvel has ever produced. From at Dragonfire XL17, Jessica Jones is the perfect example of dealing with and facing your PTSD. She also puts her family first, even going against her husband if it means a better life for her daughter. But also, she isn't afraid to call bullshit either. You can't pretend with Jessica Jones. From at Cheryl Gustafson, she's a beautiful, complicated survivor who does not adopt a Pollyanna, sunshine and light, I'm lucky to be alive attitude in the face of her trauma. Violence done to her left scars. She wears them like a leather jacket in plain view and at all times. She's real. She's real and flawed, and that's okay. And this is like the biggest part of her. And this is me talking now, not fan, but why those. But that's the other biggest but why though, is that she's real. She's not perfect. And a lot of the times our heroes are perfect and they're expected to be perfect. And a lot of the times women are expected, both in comic books and outside and even just like any media, like it's a trope, right? Like something bad happens to a woman. She fights it, overcomes it. She's strong, never thinks about it again. At least in like bad writing. But good writing actually has somebody grow, learn and adapt and survive that process. So on that note, from at Prairie Flocks, she is imperfect. She never looked like so many of the other women in comics, never acted like them. She exhibits raw, violent emotion and power, but she evolves, she heals, she confronts, she is real. From at Witty Reviewer, I love that her life is I love that her life is messy, that she doesn't have the answers, that she tries to be a hero, a wife, and a mother, and while not always being the best, always gives her best. Also, she curses more than I do, and I fucking love to curse. A fighter, a survivor, and a hero. From at Wild Young Charm, I've always liked Jessica Jones because she's perfectly imperfect. She's been through some serious trauma, and she understandably hurt, angry, impulsive, and a complete mess because of it. That said, she's also a survivor who is a fiercely loyal and protective of those she loves. From at TJ Sferdvan? At TJ Shepherd Van? Because she shows being angry and damaged doesn't mean you need to be warped and cruel. I love Matt and Gao's title for her, the unyielding woman. As she stands, so shall I. From at Ivy Wall, Ritz, a guest on our podcast we had for our Black Panther stuff and our Star Wars Last Jedi review. He says, Jessica Jones matters to me because she's real. She isn't picturesque. She's flawed. She has a set of skills we don't often see in women characters, and she isn't the typical sex symbol. I love the heavy dose of reality her stories bring to Marvel. And finally, from at Ladies of Comics, she shows reality. She isn't the typical female superhero. Her life doesn't revolve around being superpowered. You can see in her every flaw a woman can have, and she's a great mom. So yeah, we got a crap ton of fanboy why those. And we probably could have just done the episode just listing what they said.
Very true.
Because I can't say it better. I mean, yeah, I totally identify with a lot of what those said. And I think that's why Jessica Jones really struck me as one of the best shows on Netflix. So, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to talk a little bit, just give a little bit of background on Kilgrave. And end on the villain, just because I know those fanboy why those were amazing, but also a little bit heavy. Some funny things about Kilgrave. He escapes Marvel's version of Arkham a crap ton of times. And he is actually older than Jessica Jones because he was an existing Daredevil villain. In the comics, he is actually purple. he doesn't show up. Other than in flashbacks in Alias, except for the last four issues. And he initially started out as a spy who was out to steal nerve gas. The prototype nerve gas interacted with him and that gave him his powers. Obviously, it's a completely different origin story in the show, where he was a child who was experimented on and essentially like emits a virus. And it's like a virus that you get. And that's what makes you do what he says. And I can't decide who scares me more, if it's Kilgrave or Billy Russo. Those are my, like, two top people for, like, villains in the Netflix universe. And I don't know which one scares me more.
Oh, Kilgrave, 100%. Billy Russo is kind of just, like, well, I don't want to, like, spoil anything for Punisher, but like he's just kind of a jerk, like, to his mom and stuff, and he just likes money. But Kilgrave, like, makes people do stuff. Like, that's messed up.
So I'm gonna make the counter argument that it's Billy Russo, only because he doesn't have the power to make everybody do what he wants, and he's still super manipulative and messed up.
Yeah, but he plays like the pawn in most of like the
Punisher. He manipulates the crap out of Mimdani from the very beginning.
Yeah, like, is it worse than Kilgrave, though?
I don't know. He gave her a bath. This
is why I have a hard time. Because I cringe. Like, I get really uncomfortable in a lot of... I guess, so, like, Kilgrave will probably be, like, my, like, the worst villain. As in, like, the best worst villain. Because he scares me the most. But I see a lot of that reflected in Billy Russo, specifically in how he interacts with Mimdani. Like, specifically the bathtub scene. Like, I had to turn that off after watching that. Because it just... Yeah. It's bad.
But, like, one bathtub scene compared to, like, all the stuff that you just listed off.
Oh, yeah, entirely. I guess
to me, it's one of those, like, obviously, he doesn't have the powers or anything to basically touch and do the damage that Kilgrave does. Like, but Billy, what he's able to do with basically nothing other than just, like, what he looks like,
Because, like, I think I said this in, like, a chat I had with somebody, and I was like, I think it was right after I watched The Punisher, and I think Billy Russo scares me more because I can actually encounter a Billy Russo in real life.
Yeah.
That's a different question entirely.
Well, I guess I know it is, but yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, like, obviously who can do more damage, a person with powers, but as far as, like, who would actually
so Kilgrave,
do something in best villain, per se, like, for not having anything other than obviously being a pawn, Billy Russo pretty messed up.
Yeah, I will say this, though. We get to see Kilgrave's powers grow from just being able to tell somebody to being able to do it over airwaves. And you see him get stronger. And he tells an entire hospital to kill Jessica. Or to capture Jessica.
I mean, that was all just like a setup for like Billy Russo to be like the villain in the next one. So like, are we really going to get that kind of Billy Russo again?
He's ugly now.
Yeah, it's like...
I mean, we'll have to see, obviously.
Yeah. It's like, Kilgrave was, like, more compelling. Like, I wanted him to die a lot more than I wanted Billy Russo to die. That's kind of how I judge my villains.
Yeah, because I didn't want
that villain to die.
Because I didn't want Billy Russo to die till the end. Kilgrave, yeah. The moment exactly I found saying. Out what he did to Jessica, I was like, no,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, Billy Russo kind of, like, you kind of see him being a jerk, like, towards the end. And you're like, oh, he's the other villain. Oh. But, like, at the moment you see Kilgrave, you're like, nah, that guy is a terrible, terrible, scary person.
Which is, unfortunately, because of that whole other villain thing, he doesn't get to do. Because, literally, that mom scene, literally, they expand on that a little bit or show that.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right.
You're like,
yeah. No, yeah, wow. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you got, you know, more episodes of Billy Russo acting like that, then, yeah, probably Billy Russo's probably more scary, but... He made Luke shoot himself in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, obviously, he doesn't have powers.
Well,
try to kill him his wife and stuff. It's just messed up. He's messed up.
So, like, first he tells Luke Cage to blow up his bar with himself in it,
and he loves the bar.
Yeah,
he loves.
That Jessica watches, and then he has Luke Cage pretty much inform on Jessica and call him back and say everything, and then he recites the apology that Luke Cage says to her for calling her a piece of shit, because Kilgrave actually put that apology in his mouth.
Basically, if Billy Russo had Purple Man powers, he would be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I think that's why the Purple Man is cooler, because he does it already. Like, I don't know, like, if... I don't know.
Obviously, it's just... they're both very good.
Yeah, they're both very scary. They're all both better than anything that Daredevil gave us, because other than Kingpin, Kingpin's really good. But other than that, like, well, what other villains do we have to compare it to?
Unless it's not even Ring of Iron Fist.
Yeah, I didn't even finish it. It's pretty bad, pretty terrible.
I hate you, Joy.
Joy Meacham's awful. But yeah, so that, I mean, that's really all I have. Do you all have any, like, last minute questions or anything? That's pretty I think I covered a lot. I hope I got it all right. Like I said, I haven't read anything outside Alias, and I read Alias a pretty long time ago. So if I got anything wrong, let me know and at me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered a lot. I still like Punisher more, but I think that's just kind of like personal experience kind of stuff. And I'm more attracted. I find, you know, the Vendetta killed family thing for me personally is like more compelling, because like that's what I would do. Like if I had like Punisher powers, or not even powers, if I was like dude who could shoot stuff really good, that's what I would be doing.
But Punisher powers is shooting stuff
bullets.
Real good.
bullets and guns. I think that's what we attributed his powers on in the Punisher episodes, just blowing stuff up really good.
No, he does not like bombs.
Or blowing stuff up internally.
Bombs aren't precise.
Blowing stuff up eternally with bullets. Because, you know, the heart explodes when you shoot it. I just find that more compelling. But I still like Jessica Jones. I think Jessica Jones probably, after this episode, like, Jessica Jones probably passes Daredevil for me. Daredevil season one for me. So, like, Punisher and then Daredevil. Or Punisher and then Jessica Jones and then Daredevil season one. Just because of this episode itself.
Yay!
Yay, good job.
I thought it was Arrow season 4. Jessica, wait, Arrow season 4, Arrow season 3, unknown show, random NBC comedy that got canceled, and then Jessica Jones. Is that not how it goes? Did I get this right?
I hate that podcast.
But, no, like, obviously can't relate to some of the stuff with the show. I mean, she's obviously very compelling, and people actually really love her. And obviously for being a very new character.
Yeah.
Especially for what they chose as being a new character. Because they definitely, when they chose selected her for this show, they obviously, out of their whole entire roster, they chose somebody who's relatively new, only has two series.
Because there are quite a few heroes in New York that they could have gone with.
Oh, they're, I mean, whether you want to do New York or just anything, they could have done pretty much whatever they wanted to, but they selected her. And they did it very, very well.
It's a good D-list character to make start your universe.
Yeah, I know. Apparently, D-list characters just... And can't be getting anything.
Continue.
To me, I always haven't seen all the show. I've only seen bits and pieces of it, and probably maybe a little bit, like an episode or two. Just never got around to watching it.
Well, season two is coming out, so maybe I can convince you to get in on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should watch it for...
the podcast.
Watch it for the podcast. I'm just talking about, like, for your own watching, really. I think you'd like the villain. I think you'd like... Not like you like, oh, Kilgrave is awesome. I want to be just like Kilgrave. But, like, I think you would like...
Which is also, also worrying because everybody keeps telling me that. Which is like, your favorite character is going to be the villain in all this. And I'm like,
oh, I didn't think it was my favorite character.
No, so
what are they
going to
say about me at this point?
I would say intriguing character.
So first off, your favorite character shouldn't be a racist. Or a rapist.
Yeah.
Second off, you can really think he's intriguing and a very good villain.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
He's so bad.
That's what I mean. I think you'd like Kilgrave as a villain. The Luke Cage stuff is really good. I think that's like a better
gives you the Luke Cage you've been wanting.
Exactly. Like if you didn't like the Luke Cage and like the Luke Cage show, I bet you would like this Luke
Cage.
So
I didn't mind the Luke Cage and the Luke Cage show.
But you didn't like the
Defenders one is awful.
Yeah, but this Luke Cage.
This is the complete opposite of that one.
This gives you a really good Luke Cage, and it gives you some background story stuff that goes into the Luke Cage.
Because you have to remember, too, like in Defenders, he went back to jail and just got out and kind of really doesn't want to go back there.
Yeah.
Which the only thing that bugged me about that was she wasn't that bad, but I was hoping that watching Defenders, I'd get a appealing, like, all right, I really like her character. Let's have her see how well she shines. Yeah. I want to go watch this episode. And I kind of didn't get that from her.
Well, I think that
she's
just
obviously
kind of...
way better than Luke Cage. Yeah. And Iron Fist is just Iron Fist out there just swinging, yelling, I'm the immortal Iron Fist. But...
Well, no, so I think what they did with that is, like thinking about Defenders in retrospect, I think that that season of Defenders is so much focused on Daredevil and Iron Fist. And so Luke and Jessica are kind of in the background a lot of the time. So you just get
I get
these...
that, except for the fact that when they had chances to say things, they didn't want to do anything.
Well, I think she said... what she wanted to say, because Jessica ultimately doesn't want to get involved with this. Like, she really doesn't want to get involved in superhero business, because, like, kind of like how I explained, like, because even in the show, they say that she was a superhero before, and that she's left it. So,
she did. I see what you're saying. You're just, like, looking for some compelling stuff to think that, like, oh, her character's great, but we don't get enough of it compared to, like, what she just talked about.
Right.
Yeah. But you'll get that if you watch the
episode. Exactly! And you'll get the Luke Cage you like.
Yeah.
Which he's actually in a surprising amount of shows. Like, going back and rewatching, I did not realize how many episodes he's in.
Yeah, he's in a bunch.
Yeah,
he's in a bunch.
Sweet Christmas.
Sweet Christmas.
And then after rewatching it, I think that Jessica Jones and Daredevil writing-wise are the best... No. Jessica Jones and Punisher. Not Jessica Jones and Daredevil. Jessica Jones and Punisher are, writing-wise, the best of Marvel on Netflix. And I think it's totally, like, an accurate assessment. You should be like, I identify with this one, so I'll put this one above it. Because I put Jessica Jones above it, especially after this rewatch, because I see so much of myself in how she's coping and dealing with stuff. So, like... But Punisher's right up there.
Yeah. It's not like
Punisher's
like on some like pedestal for me, and then like Jessica Jones is way down here.
Yeah,
with
they're,
Iron
they're
Fist.
Like
no. Is Arrow season 4?
Subtweeting in a podcast. This is what it sounds like. And then but like on just like fight choreography and stuff. Daredevil season 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Daredevil season 1 might be on that pedestal for me. I've been taking it down for a while.
Oh, Punisher's really good. Punisher gives you way cooler fight scenes.
So I think that's it. I mean, I think it's great. You should check it out. I'm really hyped for season 2. I will say this, though. Jessica Jones is a show that hits running and doesn't stop. And it has a full arc and it doesn't fall off in the third act.
Because you have to run before you can walk.
Thank you, Tony. And on that note, so you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find us on patreon.com/ButWhyThoughPC if you want to, you know, support us a little bit more. And for that, you get access to our episodes a day to 2 days early, as well as our research notes. And at the $3, and that's at $1. And at $3, you get access to exclusive review episodes, which are picked by our $10 patrons. And for $10, you can send us to the movies. You pick the movie, we watch the movie, we make an episode just for you. So, before you turn off your phone and go back to your work, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and anywhere where they allow you to do that. It helps other people find us, and we want to hear all your feedback and reviews. You can find me on Twitter at @OhMyMythRandeer and on Instagram at @OhMyMythRandeer as well. You can see pics of my dog, Adrian.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SUPE. RRUIZ 93.
Defending John Barenthal's honor.
Yeah, we're about to get into this. Find our poll that I'm going to put out here in 5 seconds. You might have to scroll back a little bit on our feed to find it.
Matt?
And you can find me at the Lanita's Bed and Breakfast.